You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Happy Saturday morning to you. It is indeed Make the Call here on the Civic Media Sports Network. I am Jimmy Cuska, and we welcome you in on this frigid Saturday morning across Wisconsin. It was cold, a little colder yesterday, but it's all relative, I suppose. It's very cold no matter where you're at right now and where you're listening in Wisconsin. We appreciate you joining us here today. On today's program, we're going to talk a lot of Badgers with Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer, as the basketball team has won 5 in a row and the transfer portal season has all but wrapped up. So Jake will join us here in about a half an hour. Until then, though, we have our full roundtable here today from all frozen places in Wisconsin. Here in Boscobel, we reached a low of negative 19 degrees. We go to Madison and Parker Olson. What was your cold temp there this morning?
My cold temp, I want to say the feels like was in the negative 30s. The car took a couple extra seconds to actually start. Always scary for a 22-year-old man.
Nice. Well, it's also scary as a 40-year-old man because, you know, I'm old.
True.
Cold weather.
True.
Good. Conrad in Green Bay, where I imagine that it is also sort of cold.
Yeah, negative 40, I believe. It was pretty cold. The car took time to start for me as well, Parker, so we're both there in that. But I bundled up. I got to the studio. I'm glad to be here.
And that will take us to Park Falls, where, if I'm not mistaken, it was negative 147 degrees, Greg Anderson.
We might have to chop at least one number off that. Actually, I think Conrad got down a little further than we did, but with wind chill, it's been pretty nasty. I think we were mid-30s or so. But that said, yesterday, on Friday, it was minus 33 in the sunshine, and that just felt mean. That was rude. It was personal.
Well, as the owner of 3 Huskies, I can tell you that even this is cold for them. So there we go. We have our weather report in. We can now steer the rest of the conversation today into sports. And we will start our roundtable segment, our top 7 at 7, the top 7 or sports stories or not sports stories as we see them here at 7 a.m. And I want to start with this because this is kind of an age-old debate on things. And that is at number 7 in our top 7 at 7. Should we keep all-star games? Giannis Antetokounmpo was named the starter in the NBA's all-star game. But I feel like these games have, for in major sports anyway, the pro sports, they're just weird at this point. It's kind of awkward when you watch them. Like, what are we doing here? That's my take on it, though. We'll send it to you guys.
Yeah, they are just odd. And unless baseball probably has the best one, and unless they went Savannah Bananas style, I don't think that you can ever turn the baseball all-star game into a gimmick, kind of like NFL sort of has become a little bit with doing flag football and the NBA doing whatever they're doing. I don't even know, guys.
I'll say this. I do actually like the All-Star game for the NBA. I look forward to it every year. The dunk contest hasn't been where it's at, you know, in a couple of years, but I'm always excited for Saturday night. 3-point contest, skills competition, the dunk contest. Always hyped for that. And then they always try to make something different is what I like in the All-Star game for the NBA. They try, look, this didn't work last year. We're going to try something new this year, see if it gets more fan engagement. That's why I like it.
I think there's some punch missing from All-Star games. I generally like the concept. I like recognizing the players doing the best. But there's definitely an element where it doesn't matter competitively. And so there's automatically some of those best players who are kind of disinterested. If there was a new model, a way to shake it up like the NFL has been trying to do for a decade now, I'd love to. I like the idea of a new one. But until we do, it feels just like, what are we doing here? There's kind of that attitude in the air of why.
I always feel like they should just have, they over the field, they should just dangle like a big, big truckload or bag of cash, or maybe just grab one of those armored trucks with like cash spilling out of it. Winner gets this, you know, and that would maybe entice some competition.
Whether or not that's it, Idiocracy is clearly where we need to take inspiration for the answer.
Number 6 at our top 7 at 7. And this is an appropriate question because I am pretty sure we are all frozen in place here this Saturday morning. What is the coldest sporting event you've ever attended? I will just start it by saying I did a high school hockey game in Beloit, and their venue does not have fully enclosed exterior walls. You can see the outside from the inside, and it was 10 below when I did the game. So inside, it was about 20 degrees. That is the coldest I've ever been in my life, other than walking across the UW-Eau Claire footbridge. All right, we'll send it to you guys.
My coldest one was 2007. I went with my dad to the Giants versus Packers NFC Championship game, and it was negative 23 degrees with the wind chill. So we were bundled up. I was only 8 years old, so I didn't enjoy the game much, but it was fun.
At that point, Conrad, I'm glad you're here with us still. Wow, that's incredible. My coldest experience would have probably been about 2010 or so. I'd been about 16. It was right in that window. Early October homecoming football game for the high school I was going to in Park Falls. But the problem was I dressed for like 60 degrees. It was 20, 25 outside. Wasn't honestly that terrible. Not windy, but I was dying. I borrowed my brother's Leatherman jacket, and like halftime he came and said, give it back, and I went and curled up in the car. I gave up.
Oh, that's brutal when your brother takes your only source of warmth away from you. Come on now.
He did provide it, to be fair.
Okay, I mean, yeah, valid. I think the coldest game I ever went to was, it had to be a Whitewater playoff game in probably the mid-2010s, and I don't have much of a guess, but above zero, though, so I have that going for me.
Of course, none of those games are as cold as the Ice Bowl, right, as any old-timer will tell you. The Ice Bowl was still the coldest thing on the history of the planet, so, you know, we got that going for y'all. All right, let's move up. Number five in the top seven at seven, and we'll get back to sports here now. I'm curious about this because it feels like we're going to have an MLB lockout at some point, and I'm looking at some of the contracts, and even now with the Brewers trade, which we'll touch on here in just a second, but with the impending MLB lockout, do you think it's going to result in a salary cap? And I ask this because the Dodgers are paying two players this year a combined $130 million. That's more than the Brewers' payroll.
I think that if there's going to be a change to how salaries work in MLB, it's probably going to be a floor, not a cap. I think that they're going to institute some kind of a floor. They're going to have some kind of revenue sharing, and that way they distribute it to ball clubs a little bit more evenly, and it becomes fairer without making the Dodgers feel like they're being limited, because the Dodgers are going to throw a hissy fit about that if that happens, let's be honest.
I feel like it's always just going to be big market versus small market. And, you know, I don't know how much small market has a say anymore, because the big market teams just run the leagues. So it's like, I feel like, you know, whoever, if they just keep making money, they don't care that much to do a salary cap. But I don't know.
I think Parker's on it. I think you're both on it, matter of fact, because you're right. As long as the money flows, everybody will try not to change anything. And with the players having as much control as they do as a group, you know, hate to go all means of production on it, but if they all decide that they don't want to do a thing together, that union effort, that collective group decision, they really do hold a lot. Well, they hold all the cards, basically. So, Parker, I like your thought there that a floor is more likely, because you may even get the players to agree that the inequality needs to be addressed, but I doubt you'll ever get them to agree to limit their own salaries. You know, it's again, not going to get political, but when you ask people to limit their own income, it's not traditionally something that humans say, yeah, let's do that. But a floor makes sense, a little bit of addressing inequality. And I think there's actually about 10 teams that come in under that two Dodger player mark on their payroll. Of course, my favorite stat from the college football season, fired coaches made more than the Orioles last year. That's just ridiculous.
Number four in the top seven at seven. We're going to talk more about this with Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer coming up here in about 25 minutes. But I was reading his recap on the most recent win for Wisconsin. And I'm curious, do you think Badgers men's basketball will ever lose again? They've won five in a row. The actual question is not whether they will actually lose again, because the answer is pretty obvious. But they are playing extremely well right now. And I'm curious, Leather, you think this is a team that has built themselves into legitimacy given the recent stretch of success?
Well, as we know, as we've seen this season, just like they can be super hot like they have been these last five games. And then the next game, you know, they can have a defensive meltdown. And what I'm seeing, you know, I think there's a trap game coming up against Minnesota, because every time we place like a rival like that, both teams are going to go hard, I guess. But, you know, I think Minnesota might take one against the Badgers.
I would say that the Badgers will never lose again. They will never lose again in my lifetime. And it definitely will not happen on February 10th when they are down in Illinois. They definitely will not lose again.
I like the spirit.
Bold. Number three in the top seven at seven. This is a Greg Gunderson special, because We are going to get a Packers question in here today just for you, Gray, buddy. We got one for you. And now that we know that Jeff Hafley has left for Miami, which is a little bit warmer than Wisconsin right now, and I mean literally a little bit warmer. It's like 30 degrees in South Beach right now. what's next, though, for the Packers defense now that Hafley has officially left? I'm curious your thoughts on what's next for the Green Bay Packers.
Well, I will say good things. I think it's easy to keep it brief. It's early, at least now in the process as we approach the next season. That's still quite a long ways away, but Jeff Hafley is the first defensive coordinator since I've become a Packer fan to leave that unit better than he found it. And that is huge. That means the opening is more attractive. Players came there who will be a draw for certain candidates. I mean, we're seeing names that, again, you see weird names any coaching cycle, but Al Harris came to mind immediately. That was a pretty cool name to see, whether or not that turns into anything or turned into anything. But clearly there's enough interest in what the Packers have available that there are guys sitting there thinking, I could make that into a good football team. So that's all you need. Once you've got competitive interest in it and keep Brian Flores away from it, we're in great shape.
I really want to see Jim Leonard be the next defensive coordinator. I love what he did for the Badgers. That was that stretch that he had. The Badgers always had a great defense. So Jim Leonard, please come to Green Bay.
Seconded. Third. Only because I went to high school with him.
I want to shout fourth, but he is a scheme misfit in some ways. That might mean some things like Micah Parsons rushing the passer a little less, or even into coverage a little more often. And we've got a bigger defensive line than he's used to dealing with. But if Leonard could flex a little bit in what play style he uses, he's a 3-4 defense guy. Packers have been built 4-3 for a while with Hafley. So it's not necessarily the wrong decision, but I'd be really interested. If it's Leonard, I'm all over it. I'm going to be a slavering dog on Packers all offseason. You cannot stop me because it means awesome things.
You're going to be that way either way, man.
I'm not sorry. I am not sorry.
Should we bring back Joe Barry? What do you think?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Okay.
Conrad,
okay.
Why would you bring that
right.
energy here?
Why?
I'm tapping the brakes,
I'm sorry.
Conrad.
I'm sorry.
You
I'm
got
sorry.
It. You got what you wanted.
Can we move on? This has been ruined.
We're going to talk trades, right? And I know it's a top 7 at 7, but I feel like trades are all we're thinking about right now. And we'll take this past the commercial break as well. But the Brewers made a big trade this week. They dealt a very good pitcher to the New York Mets for a couple of prospects. And I'm curious about whether you guys thought the Brewers got enough for Freddy Peralta.
I will say that I think the Brewers got a pretty good amount for Freddy Peralta. Anytime that the Brewers get a pitcher who's got a pretty good amount of promise already, but a little bit of a location problem, I think, oh, awesome. That's great, because that is exactly what the Brewers do. They turn pitchers into machines. That pitching web that they've got, I don't know what's in there. I would love to see a documentary about what's going on in that lab, because it really does help those pitchers. And I think that alone might be enough. Have that added prospect on the infield is a pretty good bonus as well.
You know, I think when I'm torn between something, I do the first thing that comes to mind, and I look at Instagram comments, because that's obviously going to solve it. I didn't find any solving in there. You know, it's like, oh, the Brewers fleeced, or, oh, great, they gave Mets another solid starter. I'm all for, you know, maybe getting rid of the, you know, salary or whatever, but I'm going to miss Freddie a lot because he was great 8 years and he turned into a stud. But we got some new prospects. The Brewers have some of the best prospects in baseball right now, and I can't wait for them to trade him too.
All right. Well, let's pick this up on the other side of the break, since we got to take a quick pause. We'll talk a little bit more about the Brewers trade, and we'll talk about potentially another trade scenario, one that we've talked about for several weeks now, but one that, as the team keeps losing this year, becomes maybe a little closer to reality. It is Make the Call here, part of Civic Media. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
We are in our top 7 at 7. We're going to wrap up our thoughts on number 2, which is on whether or not the Brewers got enough for Buddy Peralta. And we didn't hear from Gray on this, but Gray, you had a chance to talk to our very own Mike Clemens, who we'll hear at the end of our show today with a sports update on this trade and what it means going forward for Milwaukee.
Indeed, I get to speak with Mike Clemens every Friday morning. So I got to bend his ear a little bit about Pat Murphy's thoughts, actually, on that trade. And Pat's apparently, heartbreak was the word that Mike actually used, really didn't want to be giving up somebody like Peralta, but still excited in the face of that about the prospects that came in. So that was the temperature that Mike had kind of taken. And I've got to lean on Mike because he hasn't steered me wrong yet when it comes to his feelings, which he doesn't share often, by the way. He's a tough nut to crack. And he opened up a little bit yesterday on a different show that we visit together. So I'm glad I get to share that with you. Some optimism in Minneapolis. I'm competing with you, Jimmy, in Milwaukee.
Mike Clemens does such a great job, and I'm just glad to have his contribution. Let's move on then to number one in our top seven at seven. And guys, I think this has been on our list every week for the past 2 months, but I looked at the standings. I opened it up. A group of people from the town I live in went to the Bucks game earlier this week against the Thunder, and the Bucks are just not there this year. They are currently 18-25. That means we are past the halfway point of the season, and they are a game and a half out of not just a playoff spot, but out of a play-in spot to the playoffs, a game and a half out, which feels it seems just unbelievable that we're at this point. But I have to bring it back on the trade question. What would you expect in a trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo? It's feeling pretty bleak right now.
I don't think a trade this year with Giannis would help the Bucks in any way. I mean, I could see maybe trading Giannis now for picks and some players, and the picks have to be, you know, for the future and, you know, at least some great draft picks. I don't expect them to make a trade for Giannis. I mean, Giannis has said that this is his home. This is where he wants to be. But I also saw a message the other day where he said, this team is not playing as one. They're just playing it for themselves. People are trying to win the games themselves. I think if they're going to make any trades this year, it needs to be with some pieces just to help a little bit with Giannis. I mean, Kyle Kuzma is absolutely awful, and I can't believe he's still playing on the team. I can't believe he's not traded for something. Miles Turner, just what can help him play better for Giannis? I don't know. It doesn't seem like anything this year is going right for them, and a trade I don't think is going to help them.
Guys, I think I'm super early in my coping with the Giannis rumors. I realized earlier today that I thought I kind of knew how he felt the other day, and now every story, all the headlines coming out of everywhere today are running completely contrary to that, and I was confused, and then I stepped back for a second and realized I was like, wait, I'm just where everybody else has been for a long time. I personally get pretty disenchanted in moments like this. It's my style, but if a player doesn't signal that they're all in and you need them to be, okay, it's time for me to start asking what I can get. You know, ring the dinner bell and see what offers are made. Maybe nothing worth it, but if possible, I would seek to get what I could out of the situation, and that's not play from the champion that he used to be.
It really is disappointing to be talking about trading a world-class, like possibly the world-class basketball player, right? And frankly, Conrad, I think you brought up when the timing of the trade would be. I don't think right now is a good time to trade him because you're not going to do anything for this season. Right, Jimmy, you were saying that they're about a game and a half back from even getting into the play-in for the playoffs. I don't know that anyone is really saying, well, man, if we pick up that couple, two, three games, whatever it is, and we can get into that playoff, they're going to make a run and they're going to have what it takes to actually get into a championship. I'm not hearing that kind of talk. And Conrad, you pointed out too that Giannis has said this team doesn't have the chemistry that they really need to have. So in my mind, you need to ride out the rest of this year with Giannis, restart next year, play a couple of games, see if you can get some kind of momentum if there is a team that has some chemistry there. And then if there's nothing going on, maybe that's when you do start talking about, legitimately talking about, I don't mean any of this yelling from New York saying, we're going to get Giannis. No, it's with actual talk that they're going to trade him. And at that point, maybe you do trade him, and I need a boatload of picks. For somebody like that, I mean, I want first rounders. I need a good handful. You know what? Dare I say, I'm going to count them on two hands. I want at least six picks.
Yeah, it's amazing that we're at this point in this moment in time. But, you know, I think for people that have been following the team, they've seen the Bucks kind of at this point for a while, and that's why the question keeps coming back up. And now this year, with the Bucks so far out of contention, you know, that's that. Now people are talking to megaphones about it. We have just a couple minutes left in this segment before we get to Jay Kokorowski, Badger Observer. So we don't have the Packers to talk about, to predict or preview. Let's get some AFC NFC championship picks and previews in here.
I'm going to say, I mean, I hate to write off the backup quarterback. I'm going to be rooting for him, all right? But the Patriots, they just look fantastic. I mean, they faced all top 10 defenses going into the playoff or in the playoffs. And I think, you know, the Broncos have one of the best, but I think they're going to come victorious. Patriots in the Super Bowl. And then on the other side, I'm going to say Seahawks. They just look too good. And I'm going to say Seahawks win the Super Bowl, but
I'm going to call this a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl. Here's the thing that I don't love. No matter who wins this Super Bowl or who goes, it's going to be a team that's been there in the last 15 years. And that's not great because you don't get the fresh faces, but I want the Seahawks. I want Jackson's. I want Sam Darnold to win a Super Bowl. Though I would love it to be over the Broncos, too. That would be just fine. It's just the Seahawks going to win no matter what. So, underdog story, sure. It's going to end after the championship game if it happens.
Well, geez, guys. Way to tease our predictions for the Super Bowl. Man. I'm right with you. As much as I would love to see the Broncos win, it's just not going to happen. They're going to have to game plan the life out of that game in order to have a shot at winning with a backup quarterback at this point in the season. I don't think it's possible. So unfortunately we'll be saying that the Patriots are going to find themselves in the Super Bowl, even without Tom Brady at this point in life. Wow. That's a weird thing to say. And then Seahawks for sure. I mean, it's hard to play a division opponent again, but they did it last week and look what they did to the Niners. I think they can do it again to the Rams here.
All right, there we go. Got our predictions in for the AFC and NFC championship games. So looking forward to having some football tomorrow to look forward to. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little football, but we'll probably stick more on basketball to begin with as Jay Kokorowski of Badger Observer and BadgerObserver.com joins us. He's going to join the full roundtable, and we're going to talk all about all things Badgers coming up right after this. This is Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network. Thank you for joining us wherever you are listening here on this very cold Saturday morning. Back right after this.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back. Jimmy Kuska here with you. We move along in our show to our segment with Jay Kokorowski of Badger Observer and BadgerObserver.com. Wisconsin men's basketball, 5-game winning streak. It looks like the Badgers are putting together a pretty nice NCAA tournament resume.
They really are. I mean, it goes back to, I think the big one, obviously, of course, is what they did against Michigan back on the 10th and just that 91-88 win. And, it's continued, and they've continued to improve defensively. They continue to the big thing with this group, right, is shooting well. And their three-point shooting has been phenomenal. And the big thing, too, they've been taking care of business. And I think in particular on Thursday night against Penn State, I think is a great sign of what it wasn't, a per se trap game. It wasn't they took care of business and they made sure of doing that where, hey, it was like 13-12 like early in the first half. And the next thing you know, Wisconsin outscores them. It goes on a 13-0 run. And then I think it was 36-9 or something like that. 38-9, something large in terms of a scoring run to finish off that half. And you saw a bunch of contributions. It's going to be very, I think this group is coming along. I think the big things still are defensively making sure that they are still stout that way that we all know Wisconsin men's basketball team should be. But then also you're seeing just really good performances, players stepping up at the right times. And then, the shooting's been really phenomenal too.
Jake, I'm going to open it up for the full roundtable here, and we'll start with Parker.
Jake, I don't know about I do know about you. You're in tap. But for a lot of Badger fans, college basketball has gotten so difficult because there's so many transfers all the time. And frankly, I myself just like to kind of walk into the season and go, okay, who's on the roster this year? Because I have not been paying attention. Somebody that has really surprised me is Braden Carrington. And in general, this roster has got so many new guys. Talk about the chemistry that this team has been able to put together now that we're a good chunk into the season.
Yeah, and it's going to be the really interesting part, I think, going forward with just even college football, which if we get into that later, Luke Fickell just had his press conference this week, and they're nearing 45 to 50 new names there. So my spring practices are going to be crazy, just trying to see what numbers with which. And that's the same thing can be applied to men's basketball, right? And with Braden Carrington, you know, coming along, this is a player that has Big Ten experience, you know, was at Minnesota, went down to Tulsa, comes back, and gosh, I mean, I think that the most important, you know, most really intriguing part of his game is just being that spark off the bench. And I kind of found that role where, you know, three of the last four games he's been in double digits, two of them have been over at least 17 points or higher. That was 17 points against the Nittany Lions, and that all came in the first half. He had like a 73-second stretch where he had 9 points on his own. And with Minnesota, and Minnesota obviously goes home and scores 21 points and shot lights out 7 of 12 from deep. And so I think there's a really good role for him and what they can do off the bench. I think Wisconsin, I feel right now they found the starting rotation. But you have guys like Austin Rapp, who had a good, I thought he had a good second half for sure against Penn State last week. And yeah, Penn State on Thursday. Yeah, Penn State. Yeah, they're winless in the Big Ten, right? Not the greatest team in the conference. But Rapp also asserted himself in, you know, inside and whatnot. But then you saw Carrington come off the bench and provide a huge spark during that first half run where they really just left no doubt against the Nittany Lions. So, I mean, I think that's going to be good for him where, you know, like I said, I think John Blackwell, Nick Boyd, Andrew Rohde, I think that they're a really good starting guard combination. But now it's going to be, hey, you have someone like Braden Carrington, who could be the first guard off the bench, and then Jack Janicki or Zach Hinziger. That's, you know, I think now you're starting to see that there's a little bit more depth in the guard room, and that's led by Carrington.
For all the, like, I'm really active on Twitter with Badger basketball, and for all the fire guard people, what would you have to say to them?
That'd be the first thing. I think with Wisconsin just in general, and I covered the team during that 2019-2020 season right before the COVID pandemic, 19 pandemic shut it down. And remember the fire guard calls and they reel off 8 straight wins and win a share of the Big Ten title. And you're wondering just what they could be doing. You know, I think that's one of the major what ifs with that team because they were playing so well at the end of that season. But I don't know you can – you know, reason with them. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's still a lot to be done within the postseason, right? And you want to see Wisconsin reach the Sweet 16 and obviously even farther if you're a Wisconsin fan. But you take a look at just how this program has adapted to the NIL era and transfer portal era and combine that with high school recruiting. I think that, and then you see the results of what they've done, who they've brought in, like a John Tanjay. You've seen what they've brought in with someone like, you know, even Nick Boyd, who, obviously is not the level of Tanjay, but he doesn't need to be because of the emergence of John Blackwell, Nolan Winter, and the cast around them. And so, I mean, this staff, the staff that he's put together and the results you see, and yeah, there are some rough edges with this team in the first half of the year and in the losses to like TCU and Villanova and Purdue, you know, but you also see this team now starting to find its groove. The schedule is helping a little bit, you know, but, you know, what do you say to number two Michigan when you go on the road and you thwart them, you know, in Arbor? So in my eyes, I mean, for those fans, a long story short, I mean, I can kind of just laugh right now because, I mean, obviously you want to see more postseason success, but for what they've done to transition to this era and the work that they've done both on and off the court, I think honestly is exemplary.
I cover UW Platteville regularly, and that's, of course, a program coached by Greg Gard's brother, Jeff. And getting to, you know, just getting to cover both guards, you know, whether it's my time at with the Wisconsin Badgers or now, of course, with UW Platteville the last 4 years, you know, first of all, it's really fun to have that angle, right, to have that perspective. But also, as you said, and I think you hit it perfectly, was that there's an adaptability you need to survive in college sports right now in this new era of NIL and transfer portal and everything like that. And I can't think of a better way to look at the consistency of a program that's always in the hunt year after year in finding ways to retool, whether it's in-state recruiting or from neighboring states where they seem to find, you know, four-year starters out of nowhere. But they also have been doing a great job in working the portal to find those contributors. For sustainability, I feel like that's the model, right? You've got to blend. It can't just be high school recruiting. You know, there's the transfer recruiting, and I feel like the Badgers are in, to some extent, even in Division III. I feel like that, you know, Coach Gard and his staff are doing that pretty well.
Yeah, this is a, I mean, you have to nowadays, and it goes towards everything that you're seeing throughout. It goes even broader to what Kelly Sheffield's done with the volleyball program, where they brought in a couple of transfers, with Jayla August, who I spoke with on Badger Observer, and then Ava Travis, you know, from out west. And then they have five recruits coming in for volleyball, and four of them, I believe, according to prepvolleyball.com, are in the top 10 in the nation for the 2026 class. Luke Fickle's finding out that way too when it comes to, they brought in what, I think they announced 32 signees. I think they're still waiting on one to announce in that regard. So there's like 30 plus players there, but they've bringing in 14 scholarship kids and a few walk-ons for the 2026 class for Wisconsin. So for basketball, you go there too, where, you know, you're bringing, you know, they brought in Nick Boyd and they brought in Andrew Rohde and Austin Rapp and Braden Carrington. And, but now you're also seeing some of the in-state recruits like a Will Garlock, who is getting, you know, Middleton product, getting decent minutes, and Zach Kinziger, you know, they took off that red shirt from them. And so you're seeing the, and then you have obviously like Hayden Jones and then Billy Oskis, who's, you know, they're international players, so they're not necessarily like the typical freshmen. They've played overseas. They've played competitively in that regard, but they're still first-year players within college basketball. And so I think that's really the most interesting part about basketball too now, is that look with what Wisconsin's doing, where they're bringing in, you know, they have this international flavor to them that they've emphasized. And then you combine that with, it's almost three different tiers in my eyes, where, yeah, you have the transfer portal for college basketball, then you have the freshmen from overseas, and then you have the freshmen from high school. And yeah, and that takes a lot of work to blend, you know, one, I mean, I wrote about it for football this week, about regarding some takeaways from the transfer portal for the Badgers in that regard. Okay, you know, the roster has been reshaped now. Okay, the roster is going to look really different, but how do you make them a team? And that goes for every sport. And I think with what Gard's done, it is really in that staff with Joe Krabenhoff, Brad Davison, Sharif Chambliss, Greg Steemsma, others. This is a group that, I mean, listen to all those guys' names. They're all also former Badgers, right? So there's a way that they've melded with this group, and it's going to be that way going forward until probably collective bargaining happens, where you can get lock in players for longer periods of time and go from there. And, but for now, I mean, this is going to be the consistent effort that coaching staffs are going to have to make, and they're going to have to expand their staffs so like they can watch the transfer portal, high school recruiting, salary cap per se with revenue sharing and NIL dollars available too.
Talking a lot about constructing a roster right now, and this may be way too early. Not maybe, it definitely is, at least in my mind. Let's turn to football a little bit. Are there any guys coming in right now in the portal, or if they're freshmen, or maybe guys that were redshirts this year or had injuries, because Lord knows the Badgers have had plenty of injuries in football. Is there anybody that we should be keeping our eyes on as somebody that we maybe haven't heard a lot about last year as a Badger, who we want to highlight coming into this season coming up once we turn around close to September?
Yeah, like a non-transfer guy right off the bat is someone that was injured in April during spring practices, and it kind of led to the, in my eyes, was the domino effect of the offensive line not being great, was the injury to Tevin Haywood. And left tackle, consensus four-star recruit, Navy All-American Bowl, honoree, and one of the, I think, a lot of people propped him up to be the next great Badger lineman. And that injury on April 10th, I remember I was at that practice, and that they couldn't find a left tackle member. They had to switch over Riley Malman from right tackle to left tackle. He also, they tried bringing in Davis Hines in. He didn't work out at left tackle. So, but he acted good for them. They had moved in the center with all the injuries and the, you know, another play there at center. But I think Kevin Haywood coming back from his, that knee injury, I think is going to be very interesting to see what he does. I think he's going to be a name to watch. Transfer portal wise, I'm looking through this list. There's such a long list. I think the guys I'm going to be watching, I mean, Abu Sama III is from Iowa State. I think he has got close to 2,000 yards rushing and over 5 yards per carry in his career. Really good back. I think it's going to fit with what Jeff Grimes is wanting to do within the scheme. And, you know, which again is a wide zone, is very comparable to what Sean McVay or Matt LaFleur is, a variation of this type of offense that you see from McVay and Matt LaFleur in the pros. So I think that way, but I also like some of the other guys on the radar. I'm looking to see what some of, you know, I wrote about this in Badger Observer. You know, they had, like, if I'm not mistaken, 6 former consensus 4-star recruits, which, for those that don't know, I mean, you have these recruiting services, and there's 3 of them majorly now. There used to be 4 before a couple of them merged, but looking at some of the class, like, you know, a guy like Kai Bates from Florida State, or a Zion Kearney from Oklahoma, you know, those type of guys were highly regarded in high school. Things didn't pan out. How does Wisconsin take them and mold them, and can they coach that potential, what they all saw, and coach them with the highest potential, and then make that impact now? So those are some of the things I'm watching. But even some, and then the last part is like some of the group of 5 guys, or even lower level guys. You know, Liam Danitz from Hope 3, Division 3 Hope College, All American in track, All American in football. How does his game translate up to the Power 4 Big 10 level? So yeah, there's so many questions right now. And Parker, that's great to know. That's great to add. And I say, please have every question you have, because this is all on paper. This is all on paper, y'all. So have those questions, but they did do work in that transfer portal, and it'll be where, you know, come late March, April, whenever they have spring practice begin, I'll be there and we'll be watching.
Jake, I appreciate all of your insight. It's great to have you at the full round table, the full panel today to talk Badgers. Looking forward to our chat next week. Thanks as always.
You guys take care. Have a great weekend. Stay warm.
All right. We'll wrap up the show right after this. It's Make the Call here on Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Big thanks to Conrad Krieger, Parker Olson, and Greg Gunderson, our roundtable panel, for Write the Call every week here on Civic Media. I will take you the rest of the way. I am Jimmy Kuska, the sports director here at Civic Media. We spent a lot of time in the first half hour of the show talking about trade scenarios and talking about the Milwaukee Bucks specifically and what to do with Giannis. And you know, we did it with the context of, you know, just leaving the injury aside. He had an injury last night that's going to keep him out for a while. And I think that might factor into a decision to be made maybe this season versus the offseason or next year or whenever it happens. But just really sad times all around for the Milwaukee Bucks right now. I don't really know how to express myself other than saying that I'm just sad. It's just sad. Like, I want the Bucks to be good. Giannis is amazing, but the Bucks are just so bad this year, and they're going nowhere. Giannis is out for months, maybe a couple months. He might miss the All-Star game. We're going to find out more with Mike Clemens in our sports update here in just a second. But when we were having the discussion, we never really factored the injury part of it in, and that leads me to believe that he's probably not going anywhere. This weekend in Civic Media Sports, got a bunch of high school stuff, a lot of delays from Friday into Saturday. We've got hockey, we've got hoops, we've got more coming your way this week. Next week, we have a full slate of high school games. It looks like on our calendar, there are over 40 high school games being aired by Civic Media stations around the company. As always, you can find all of our stations and our coverage at civicmedia.us. Click on your favorite local station, and you can see what games we are picking up in your area. As of right now, at this point, looking at the schedule, we are on pace to easily clear 600 high school broadcasts this school year. So when you want to talk about local originating coverage, community coverage, being there and active in broadcasting right where you live here in Civic Media across nearly 36 stations in 3 states, yeah, we've got you covered. So looking forward to some of those games coming up here in the next few days. Let's get that update from Mike Clemens right now, though, and get the latest on the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo's injury and all the things you need to know going into the weekend in sports. I'm Jimmy Kuska. This has been Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Another setback for Giannis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks losing at the buzzer, 102-100 to the Denver Nuggets, and they may be losing Giannis Antetokounmpo for the next 4 to 6 weeks. He says he felt something pop in his right calf muscle during the game, the same injury he had in December that sidelined him for 8 games. What's next?
go to MRI tomorrow. After the MRI, they will tell me probably I popped something in my calf, one of my shoulders or something. Probably give me a protocol of 4 to 6 weeks, and I'll be out.
Bucks head coach Doc Rivers pulled him out of the game early.
You know, he was in the med room, but I don't think it looks great, personally. You know, this calf keeps coming up, and it's concerning. I'm not a doctor, but I'm smart enough to know that his calf, it keeps bothering him. There's something that is there, and it keeps happening, and then that's troublesome for all of us.
College hoops. Marquette losing to the Butler Bulldogs in Indianapolis, 87-76. The Golden Eagles still looking for their first win on the road this season. The Wisconsin Badgers looking for their sixth win in a row when they host the USC Trojans tomorrow afternoon, game time 3 p.m. at the Kohl Center. Nick Boyd, guard who transferred to Madison from San Diego State last spring, on how the Badgers have turned things around.
Like Nolan said, we play into the buzzer sound, you know. I feel like, you know, over these last couple weeks, man, like, we just been getting pushed around too much, and that's the mentality we carrying with us for the rest of the year. You know what I mean, we get pushed, we stepping right back up. So when we get knocked down, we getting right back up. So yeah, it's no more of that, no more.
Greg Gard asked about Sunday's game after beating Penn State by 27 points the other night, 98-71.
Their nickname is the Trojans. It's maroon and yellow. They're based in LA. Eric Musselman's the coach. They got the kid that transferred from Auburn, Mazir Baker. Arenas just got healthy, talented. That's about all I know right now. We'll play on Sunday. You're better off talking to my staff. I literally am one day at a time.
Baseball, it had been rumored since the owners' meetings last month, and it became a reality this week. The Milwaukee Brewers traded their ace, 29-year-old pitcher Freddy Peralta, to the New York Mets. One report says it's likely Peralta will be the Mets' starting pitcher opening day. Now, Peralta led the National League with 17 wins last season. He had 1 year left on his contract. I asked him, what was he most proud of his performance this year?
I think you guys know, just being able to be outside every 5 days competing and giving my best.
The Brewers also sent pitcher Tobias Myers to New York. The Mets, in return, gave Milwaukee two prospects, a pitcher, Brandon Sproat, and utility player Jet Williams, both highly ranked. NFL, Green Bay Packers left tackle Rashid Walker arrested at a New York City airport yesterday on gun charges. Walker had reported to officials at TSA before trying to board a flight on Delta that he had a pistol, a Glock, inside a lockbox, but it violated policies at LaGuardia Airport, and he was arrested and charged. Rashid Walker is set to become a free agent in March. The Packers are searching for a new defensive coordinator after learning last weekend that head coach Matt LaFleur had agreed to a multi-year contract extension. Jeff Hafley, his defensive coordinator, was hired as the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
I want to thank Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers. The last 2 years have been two of the best of my life. He's a great football coach. He's a great friend. And he's going to have continued great success. I also want to thank those players there. In 2 years, we got real close. I mean, really close. The love, the connection, the support. It was hard to say goodbye to those guys. But the phone calls and the texts to you guys meant everything to me. I love you. I wish you the best, other than when we come to Lambeau next year.
Now, some candidates being interviewed to replace Hafley include former Cardinals head coach Jonathan Gannon and former Packers defensive back Al Harris, now the secondary coach for the Chicago Bears. And the Dolphins' new general manager is John Eric Sullivan, who served under Ted Thompson and Brian Gutekunst over the past 20 years in Green Bay.
The Packers organization. I was very, very, very lucky to land where I landed 22 years ago, be mentored by some of the best in the business. I was very fortunate to be entrenched in a process, a proven process that brought 30 years of sustained success to that place. Ted Thompson. Ted Thompson, in my opinion, is one of the best to ever do it. He was a guy that was seen, not heard. He trusted the process, and more importantly, he trusted the process through times of adversity. The thing that I will take away from him, most importantly, is beyond anything, he always, always did what is best for the team. Brian Gutekunst was probably who had the most impact on me because of how our careers fell. Having said that, he was a tremendous sounding board for me all the way through.
That's the Miami Dolphins' new GM, John Eric Sullivan, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.